Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Captain?
Not here.
Captain?
Report.
Signatures detected.
Shields up.
Signatures detected.
Red alert.
Context Starfleet Command.
What's happened?
Context Starfleet Command.
Delay that order.
Context Starfleet Command.
This is the captain.
Context Starfleet Command.
Get out of my chair. Chair.
We have engaged the Klingons.
Klingons?
Welcome to The Greatest Discovery. It's a new Star Trek podcast from the makers of The Greatest Generation. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison.
We got kind of a pile of short treks dumped on us last week, and so we're cutting in.
Yeah.
We're cutting in the middle of our schedule.
Our regularly scheduled bye week.
Yeah, and so we're kind of resetting the schedule so that it better matches up with the short treks releases to come.
I think CBS should have done what we're doing on our behalf. They should have scheduled this so it fits with our podcast, you know? Nobody's paying for CBS All Access without us.
It continues to be one of the more infuriating UI situations ever, because no matter how often I watch a short treks, it takes me 8 clicks to get in there using the app.
Yeah, it doesn't float the shows that you actually watch to the top.
No.
So,
yeah.
So you always have to go hunt for short treks.
Yeah.
Oh, look at this! I was just trying to get the episode up on my computer here, in case I wanted to refer to a shot or something. And I click the episode, and I get an unexpected condition was encountered. VCI error, initializing RCO colon IMA, SDK is missing, error code 1001. Any ideas what to do? Do I pull out the cartridge and blow in it?
I don't know. I don't know what they're doing over there. Tell you one thing, though. I would rather die before I watch an episode of Young Sheldon. So stop trying to push that on me. On the top line of this app. Like, you would think the programming, like, programmatically, they would understand that a user account that only watches Star Trek or Short Treks will not watch The Good Wife or whatever.
I've heard that the Good Fight is a good show, though.
That very well may be, Ben. But do I need to click past it 14 times to get to the show that I actually watch?
You don't. You shouldn't have to.
It's like that theory of grocery store design, like how they put the milk on the opposite side of the produce.
Oh, yeah.
They want you to walk through Young Sheldon in order to get to Short Treks, and I don't like it. I resent it.
They put the cheap shows on the end caps to make you think that there's good stuff down that aisle.
That's it exactly. Yeah.
Oh, this aisle's going to have some deals. Yep. Just more Young Sheldon.
The theory is that if we can just irritate our customers into watching or buying our programming, that'll work out best for us in the long run, right?
How are we going to trick more people into watching NCIS? Nobody's going to do it because they set out to watch NCIS, but if we can trick them.
God, if only. Give me all the LL Cool J shows. Give me them all. There should be fewer NCIS shows and just more LL shows.
Yeah.
The LL expanded universe.
I got a friend who works as an AD in television,
and he does a lot of reality shows, but he also does a lot of award shows. And he told me that LL Cool J is on speed dial at all award shows because he's been on, I think he said he'd been on 3 award shows over the course of his career where, like, on a last minute basis, LL Cool J came in and hosted the show and just hit dingers all night because he's great at hosting. That's why he keeps getting those gigs.
Hey, Ben, do you have an LL Cool J impression? Because I've got one.
Oh, do you?
Yeah. So here's what you do. Do it together with me, okay?
Okay.
So look into the camera. The camera's right in front of you. That's the one thing with the tally light. And I want you to turn your head to the left 45 degrees, okay? But keep your eyes on the camera and the tally light.
Okay.
I want you to take your right hand.
And am I eventually going to kiss a bird? Like he does in Deep Blue Sea.
Take your right hand and make a gun out of your fingers, right?
Okay.
So pinky, ring, middle into a fist, but pointer out, thumb out.
Okay.
All right. Now I want you to take the fingertips of your pointer and your thumb, touch the sides of your lips, and just sort of like
give a little kissy.
Yeah. And then wink at the camera. That's LL Cool J. That's what makes him so great.
That's got a lot of verisimilitude. I'm not wearing a Kangol.
Yeah.
And that would really take it over the line.
Yeah. Yeah, that really does it. There's only one LL Cool J.
He's hard as hell. He'll battle anybody.
You just Jackie and Laurie'd me a picture of your LL. It is an excellent LL Cool J, Ben. Yeah. Master of impressions on The Greatest Generation. That's
I wish I had the abs to go with that impression, though.
Wasn't there a music video that LL did? It was Hey Lover, right? And the whole video was him just doing bench press exercises.
I'm not familiar with that video.
Oh, man. There was a time when Hey Lover was like the zeitgeist music video. Working out every day,
thinking about you. I think LL had kind of passed his prime by the time I became aware of popular music.
Ladies love Cool James. Still do. I am shocked at how much LL Cool J conversation we've had on the program so far. LL nowhere to be seen.
Oh man, he's wearing the Snow Beach polo jacket in this video.
Yeah.
Cool. Wait, is that the Snow Beach polo jacket? Or is that just like a cheap knockoff?
I doubt it would be a cheap knockoff. Come on.
No, because the Snow Beach polo jacket says Snow Beach on it, and this one does not.
Hmm. There you go.
Shout out to the Lowheads in the Greatest Gen / Greatest Discovery listenership.
All -6 of them.
You don't
Happy
think
to
we
have
any,
on board.
Any listeners that regularly attend the Low Goose on the Deuce?
I think the Venn diagram is Greatest Generation listeners, and then that other circle has been thrown into the bushes across the street.
I was in a conversation the other night where we were talking about why does Ralph Lauren get to design the Olympic look for Team USA every year?
Uh-huh.
And I was like, because he's the most important American sportswear designer. And like four heads just turned and looked at me and jaws dropped that I would make an assertion like that.
I love that that's how you skip records at parties.
Yeah.
That's a good time. Boy, we're going to be attending the same parties soon. That's exciting.
Yeah.
But one party that we've got to attend on this very episode is the discussion of this latest Short Trek spin. What do you say we get into the thing? It's the second Short Treks in season 2, and it's called The Trouble with Edward.
They always have a little bit of fun with how they do the motherfucker. This fucking interface is so bad.
Leave this in, Rob.
You know how when you pause CBS All Access in the browser, it takes the video down to like a little picture-in-picture size?
Uh-huh.
Which is very frustrating if you're trying to do a screen grab or something.
Hmm.
I just tried to play it, and it kept the video down in picture-in-picture size.
The Enterprise has arrived at Prajine 63, where it is it's going to drop off one of its newly minted engineers turned captain to take command of the Cabot.
She's a science officer turned captain, I thought.
She is great. Great enough that a friend of the program, Anson Mount, is sorry to see her go. But unfortunately, she will be taking command of the Frisbee Golf class Cabot.
God fucking damn it. You got to say it, not me. It's fine. I wrote it down also.
All right. Well, let's talk about the conversation between friend of the program, Anson Mount, and new captain Lynn Lucero.
Yeah, Lynn Lucero getting her first commish. So he's given the kind of like atta girl and also, you know, some fatherly advice, some friendly captain-to-captain advice. He starts with a bit, which is don't show them any weakness or they'll eat you alive, which is an edict I think Anson Mount lives his life by.
Right.
So many a truth told in jest, kind of an advice.
Yeah.
But he also says, like, you're gonna find that there are people that are not at your level, and he does that thing where he holds his hand up and then points, you know, through it at the transporter chief to indicate, for example, this guy. And she says, yeah, but I'm sure there'll also be like people that are even smarter than me on that ship, and I'm looking forward to it. She's an optimist.
Great rapport between them.
Yeah.
This Rosa Salazar was the star of last summer's Alita Battle Angel, which was a great big movie. I didn't recognize her because they gave her great big eyes in that film.
She has such big sparkly eyes in real life. I don't know why they needed to make them even bigger and more sparkly in that.
I think she was great casting in this.
I liked that Alita Battle Angel movie.
I never saw it. You probably saw it on an airplane, right? Where you see everything. The way it was meant to be seen.
It was a movie that I regretted not seeing in the theater when I saw it on the 7-inch seatback screen on an airplane, because it's full of spectacle.
I wonder what Jonathan Frakes thought when he looked over at your seatback television screen and saw you watching Alita Battle Angel. He probably asked to be moved, right? That's part of the story you didn't tell me.
You know good and well that I only did crossword puzzles on that flight, Adam.
Yeah.
I did not want him to think anything about me.
Oh, he thinks something about you, Ben. I'm positive.
God damn it.
Similar story happened to a young man in the Pacific Northwest about 20 years ago.
Like, everybody is in uniform in this scene, except for the one lady next to the captain is just in a sweatshirt with a Starfleet badge.
Yeah. Casual Friday?
I don't know.
I might not put on the sweatshirt when Pike's due to transport a captain off ship.
Oh, wait, there's another sweatshirt in this scene. One of the dudes has a sweatshirt also. Wonder what that's about. Somebody pointed out online that in the last Short Treks episode, there was a dude wearing a scant uniform.
I know. I am frequently frustrated by the introduction of costuming on the show that we can't buy.
Yeah.
And I'm going to revisit this this beef later on, because there's definitely a piece of costume I want to buy that we see later that is just so tantalizing. It's right there.
Yeah.
Make it a thing.
They're having this McLaughlin group.
Issue one.
And they're kind of going down the line.
It's on the Cabot.
Yeah, on the Frisbee Golf.
Mm-hmm.
Because the problem that they're trying to solve is that this planet they're in orbit of is on the frontier between the Federation and the Klingons. And it is on the brink of collapse because the people are starving. And so They're trying to come up with some interventions that they can do to boot up this planet's ability to generate food for its people. And there's a lot of ideas. A lot of them sound slow. They're like altering the pH of the soil is one of the ideas. And, you know, like the timelines don't sound like urgent health crisis level timelines. They sound like, yeah, we'll have these guys squared away in a decade or so. And then the camera pans over and we find H. John Benjamin.
It's just me.
Best in the biz.
Yeah.
When was the last greats. Time you attended a staff meeting where you were seated at a table and a manager figure was pointing a finger gun around that table, asking for updates on things? This is I felt a great amount of anxiety here, just like our pal Edward Larkin did. It's tough.
I the last time I had anything like that, I guess, was in 2016 when I had that media company job.
Yeah.
And my desk was also like right outside my boss's office, and there was just a glass. He worked in a fishbowl style, uh-huh. You know. Open concept office.
A fishbowl class office?
Yeah, and I was just like right in front of him, so...
Oh, no.
I always had an update because there was no escape, you know?
Yeah. Did you have to put on one of those screen protectors that you can only look at a certain angle?
I thought about that frequently.
That cuts both ways, right? Like, if you get one, it also looks like you're trying to hide something.
Yeah, I'm... You know, whenever I'm in an auto rental place or something like that, and I see that they have those screen protectors, I'm always craning my neck to see if I can catch a peek of whatever it is. You know, somebody's rental history. Ooh, what if I find it out?
H. John Benjamin is uniquely great at presenting an air of confident stupidity. Like, he doesn't know what he's doing, but he's making it seem like he does, and that's the funny part.
The case that is made about his character is that he is, like, an incredibly narrow talent.
Yeah.
That he is spectacularly good at, and that is something to do with protein.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's really bad at everything else. like bad at everything else down to, like, his estimation of whether other people are experiencing reality the same way he is.
There's some narrative sleight of hand here that makes him look worse than I think he actually is. And it took watching this short a couple of times to get it. Like, the problem of finding a food source is extreme. Like, it is the number one problem they're trying to solve. And yet, for some reason, that is downplayed in the face. Like, as soon as Edward Larkin talks about eating the tribbles, it's made into this absurdity.
Right.
But from his perspective, he is trying to solve a problem here.
Yeah. I wondered if it was inspired by that thing where North Korea got a bunch of, like, giant bunny rabbits, and they were saying that they were going to start breeding this giant type of bunny rabbit to feed their populace.
Oh, that's great. That's a good idea.
Because it's a very similar like kind of gross, right? It's like it's an animal that most people think of as cute, and suddenly you have to contemplate shucking it like a scallop.
That word and the way H. John Benjamin says it,
like a scallop,
is brilliant. His read on that word makes me laugh every time.
Blood red.
I didn't know anything about this short check going in. I didn't realize that he was going to be in it because he wasn't in the little postage stamp that you click to play the episode. And when I started watching him, I was just laughing. Like, I thought it was really funny.
He doesn't even have to do anything to be funny. He's that kind of natural talent. He's great.
It is very rare that Star Trek sets the challenge for itself, let's do a funny thing, and nails it this hard.
Yeah.
But you can count on H. John Benjamin to do it.
Yeah. The main takeaway of this scene is that Edward has been humiliated in front of everyone.
Yeah.
And he can't have that.
No. And the next scene, you know, brilliantly underscores that. He's like hanging around in the lunchroom trying to take a straw poll from... one of the other officers that was in that room, like, yeah, like, she really sucks, right? New boss, woof.
Yeah, we get some quick cuts around to to truly understand the depth of Edward's pain. We get that scene at the Replimat. We get the scene in the lab where he's jealous of his coworker receiving this approval that he didn't get. Like,
that Trill lady has a real wide stripe of spots too.
Yeah.
Like, I watched this right on the heels of watching a Deep Space Nine episode and having a direct comparison to Jadzia Dax's, like, maybe 1-inch wide stripe of spots. This lady has like a full 2.5 inches going down the side of her face.
Was she implanted with a chode drill? Like, is there a width of trill that translates to the width of the spots?
She's got a very thick ankylosaur.
You know, we're going to have to make this Y incision into more of a T incision, if you know what I mean.
T for thick.
Yeah. It's on the heels of this Trill receiving her approval that that Edward introduces a mist into the triple chamber before being called into a meeting with Captain Lucero. And the meeting does not go well, Enterprise.
It sure doesn't. He's been trying to file complaints with HR about the new captain. Word came back to her pretty quickly that this was happening, and it did not take her long to figure out who had been sending them.
I think this is the scene that you cast for this moment, because it's just two people at a desk, and you need someone who can hit the ball back comedically.
Yeah.
With John Benjamin. And I think Rosa Salazar has a thing about her face that I'm really envious of. A thing that I get dinged on all the time is how my face just kind of betrays me and my true feelings, especially when I don't want the person I'm talking to feel bad about something. Often my face will make them feel bad.
Yeah, that's why you're such a naturally terrible poker player.
But Captain Lucero and Rosa Salazar playing her has this sort of openness in her expression where you know she's frustrated and you know she hates Edward, but her face is almost like, it's almost sunny in this bemusement of this terrible person seated
right
in front of her. It's such a narrow place for an expression, and I think it's perfect in serving the comedy of it. Because if she were scowling, like, that's a totally different feeling, and I don't think it works comedically.
I think if this scene doesn't work for you, like, the whole episode won't work for you.
Yeah, yeah.
And I really like it, and I think that the thing that I thought about a lot in this scene was this is, like, one of her first tough command decisions, you know? Like, mm-hmm. she's been captain for, like, a day, as far as we know.
Yeah.
And already she's got this dope trying to undercut her authority, and that's gonna, you know, she's young, she's out, you know, on her own. There's nowhere, the buck stops with her, so she's got to solve this problem, and that's devastating.
Yeah, and especially because she went in with the expectation of working with people smarter than she was, like,
right.
It's got to be, you got to get the bends coming off of the entrepreneur and being stationed on the Cabot in that way, right?
Yeah. Do you think they called it the Cabot because this episode's got a lot of cheese?
I was just allowing time for the sitcom laugh there. Yes. Yes, I do. Very funny.
Thank you, Adam. The tribbles start, it's like a Mogwai sprayed with water, right?
Yeah, it really feels like Gremlins from here to the end, for sure.
Lots of baby tribbles popping off, and there's a great shot of H. John Benjamin walking out of his apartment, bleary-eyed and sleepy, as an alarm sounds, and all of his crewmates run down the hallway because there's been a breach in a lab. And we cut to a very funny wide shot of revealing that he's just in his tidy whiteys and his, like, no-show socks with his sleepy time sweater.
I love editing for comedy like this.
Oh,
like,
man.
Well fucking done, guys.
Yeah.
And so this funny. Now cements Red Starfleet pajamas into canon. Like,
yeah.
The first time we saw them was in the Culber Stamets cross toothbrush scene.
Mm-hmm.
And now we get a return to the red pajamas. Again, Ben, I want to buy red Starfleet pajamas.
Yeah.
And there's no place for me to do that.
We got
to
get John Van Sitters on the phone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where is this? Where is the Data and Geordi in a shuttle pod window reflector to keep my car cool in the summer?
I don't understand.
Should we form a company and license the Star Trek brand and just put these things out ourselves?
Okay.
How hard would that be to do?
These ideas would pay for all of that. Like, yeah. They pay for themselves.
Even if we break even, if I got the jammies and the window reflector, I feel like it'd be worth it.
Agreed.
Here's a sea planet deep. Seas can earn their board and keep.
We cut to a very fun montage set to the Johnny Appleseed song. There are a couple of scenes in this episode that make you feel like you've gone insane. And I think this is one of them. Like, you just don't see a Star Trek episode set to this kind of music.
Yeah.
And whether or not absurdity agrees with you in the context of a Star Trek program, I think will determine whether you like this episode.
I thought it was also kind of brilliant because, like, this isn't a song that I have on repeat on my iPod.
Mm-hmm.
So the initial music cue, when it's just the instrumental part, does really sound like TOS silly time music.
Yeah.
It also planted a theory that I have about this episode. As the lyrics fade out, we come to a scene in the mess hall where the Trill science officer and the captain are talking about how the ship has like mere hours of life support left given the rapid rate at which these Tribbles are reproducing. And they're reproducing fast because Edward genetically altered them to reproduce faster. He said in the McLaughlin group that they are very slow to reproduce, and that was one thing that they had to find a workaround for. And in this mess hall McLaughlin group,
issue two,
he reveals that he implanted his own DNA in them. So here's my question for you, Adam. Is the Johnny Apple Seed song implying that he busted nut on a Tribble, and that's how he got the DNA into them?
Was the mist that was introduced to the Tribble in the cage the DNA that we're talking about?
I don't know.
And if it is, did Edward bust into a test tube and then put that test tube into a vaporizer,
right?
And then spray jizz vapor into... There's a lot of ways that this could have happened. I think the comedy is in the idea of him fucking one of these.
Right.
But, yeah.
But all of the seed talk in that song just put me in a certain frame of mind. And then the way he's, like, sitting back in his seat, kind of like post-coital relaxation look to him.
I love how uninterested he is in helping at this point, too.
Yeah. Because he's like, he's already been fired.
And he also makes the case that they should eat them. He keeps going back to it. Like, if everyone eats these things, we won't have a problem. It's such a throwaway line here, but it's great. He's fairly consistent with what he thinks the course of action should be.
Yeah. It doesn't seem like they've really, like, gone ham on these Tribbles yet. Like, they've got a guy walking around in the background with a giant vac pack trying to suck up Tribbles, but he's clearly not sucking up Tribbles as fast as he can. And that's when they break out the Pelican cases full of phaser rifles, and then it's like full human on Tribble combat through to the end of the episode.
As much as we like Captain Lucero, it feels like venting compartments into space should have been on the list of possible options here. Because we get a couple of very fun exterior shots of, like, sort of a rising waterline of Tribbles on some decks.
Yeah. I sort of wondered why they didn't do that, though. Like, everybody get in shuttles, and then we'll open the ship up to the vacuum, like, we'll kill all these tribbles, and then we can, get back to work.
You know, I think the answer occurs in that first staff meeting when they're trying to establish whether or not they're sentient, and I think that question goes unanswered. Maybe they make no attempt to murder them all because of that.
Oh, yeah, because they do set the phasers to stun.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That also supports that argument, so maybe.
Well, they wind up having to abandon ship, and the, you know, the captain is, like, trying to be the last person off the ship. She's holding Tribbles back with her phaser rifle, but Edward is standing there in the hallway explaining that he's not going to go with them. He's feels that he's made a very important scientific discovery. He's not dumb. You're dumb.
Famous last words of the dumb.
She's like,
I've learned. No, I never said you were dumb. You messaged my bosses and told them I was dumb.
Dumb didn't come up until you brought it up.
I'm not a sick person. You're a very sick person.
Yeah. I'm an extremely stable genius, and you're bad.
This scene is great, and it had to end like this, right? The captain is backing up into the escape pod. The wave is approaching.
It's like water coursing around a curve in a canyon, kind of the way the tribbles are filling the ship up at this point.
I love the effect. It really looks that way. It's a really unique take on it.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. The button on the episode is the obvious hearing at Starfleet where the captain is presumably being court-martialed or brought before a panel of admirals to explain how she lost a ship that the invasive tribble species took over this planet. They had to evacuate the civilization that was there. Like, this is a, like, talk about your all-time major fuck-ups.
Yeah.
And you really feel bad for her, you know? Like, how is she going to tack her way out of this? The buck does stop with her as the captain, but also this just ran away from her control so fast that it's hard to imagine any way around it.
It reduces her possible responses to the questions to that one simple answer she has. And that really is a very efficient way of telling the story of what happened to her ship.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a question I've had that I think the both of us have had for a long time. How much destruction could one bad faith operator do on a Federation starship?
Yeah. A lot.
Yeah. Turns out it is a ton.
He was an idiot.
Yeah, so we get a post-credits commercial parody, which you should definitely go back and watch if you haven't already. I love that there's like an 80s Saturday morning mid-cartoon commercial vibe to it.
Yeah.
It is an absurd cherry on an absurd cake. Did you like that cake, Ben?
I liked the cake and I loved the cherry.
Yeah, you gotta eat that cherry.
Mm-mm. How about you? Did you like the cake?
I fucking loved it. And I was shocked to see how mixed the feelings were about this episode. Like, the same old shit that we hear all the time about Discovery not being a real Star Trek. Those people came out in force against the trouble with Edward. But I respect the hell out of the big swing that this took. Star Trek is not a property that does comedy well, and this, whether or not it's Star Trek, is great comedy.
Yeah, this is really funny.
It was so funny throughout the whole thing.
One thing I thought about watching it was that I was alone in my living room laughing out loud, and
yeah.
I think that, like, we've talked about that before, like, if something can get you to laugh out loud when you're by yourself and
that's
no one is around to, like, share the laugh with.
Yeah.
It's that's
huge.
That's very genuine laughter.
One of the reasons I think this episode was so funny is that it was written by Graham Wagner, whose credits include shows like Silicon Valley, Portlandia, and The Office. And there definitely felt like there were those contemporary television comedy aspects to this. This felt like it was in very good hands in that way.
Definitely.
God, it was... I really love this episode, and I hope this foreshadows what may be coming in a show like Lower Decks. You know, when you get comic writers with real bona fides working on this stuff, I think the results can be really great, and I think this gives me a lot of hope for what that could be.
Yeah, me too.
I really think this is one of my favorite Star Trek things in a long time, this short treks. Like, I really think, like, I don't want to undersay it. I know that that's a big thing to say, but
yeah,
I think it's spectacular.
That's going to be controversial, Adam, but yeah. I respect the hell out of it. Do you want to check and see if we have any Priority One messages on this a week earlier than anticipated episode of The Greatest Discovery?
Sure do.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Well, Ben, we've got nothing in the Priority One message inbox.
Fuck! Is this podcast about to go the way of the Cabot?
I would like to see our Priority One message inbox fill up like so many tribbles.
I would like Priority One messages that arrive pregnant with other Priority One messages.
I would like to fuck a Priority One message with my DNA.
It's in your blood.
Sending a Priority One message is easy to do. All you have to do is go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, where personal messages are $100 and commercial messages are $200. And look, you can reach every vessel in Starfleet by sending one of these.
You can.
Whenever we read one on our wildly popular show, it reaches so many people.
It does. And it means the world to us. Looking forward to our next episode, which is in a couple of weeks. Maybe we'll have P1s on that.
Yeah, get in there. Get in the box.
What's in the box? Squarespace. Got to build yourself a website if you want to stand out online. Social media websites are not cutting it anymore, and you really can't tell the story of what you do and sell your products or services or time effectively without a really great looking website. Squarespace is the way to do it. Using Squarespace Blueprint, you can choose from professionally curated layout and styling options. You make a seamless checkout option for your customers. You can accept PayPal, Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer customers the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and ClearPay. Amazing. So head to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/trek to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show. And this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to... oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you... discover yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible!
Drunk Shimoda!
I did. I mean, this episode is rich with Shimodai. Shimodas.
Yeah.
I give it to Pike, though, for clearly calling that transporter chief a dumb right in front of his face.
Yep. He's the kind of captain that I think could... embarrass you and make you feel bad about it, or embarrass you and make you feel like, my captain's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And I'll take his shit because he's that cool.
Yeah, he's a fun captain.
I think we're both avoiding the obvious Shimoda, which is Edward. Edward is not my Shimoda. My Shimoda is Noel.
Edward is like up there with all-time Shimoda status, though, right?
Yeah. Like, I think honorary Shimoda should go to Edward to the degree that we should almost rename it for him.
Right.
My Edward Larkin for this episode is going to be Noel, though. Noel is the guy at that first conference room that Edward says he fed one of the first tribbles to, because yeah. Noel is a foodie. And Noel's face here is one of the great, sometimes when you're at one of these meetings, you don't want to be noticed. And a great way to not be noticed is to just sort of be looking at your work in front of you.
Yeah.
I think he glances at the captain before turning away suddenly and kind of like, nah, that's not true. Sort of just disputes Edward's assertion about them dining on tribbles. But then the very next scene at the Replimat, Edward gauges support for his idea that the captain is a dumb. And Noel is the guy at the Replimat getting his big salad, and he is just not having it.
Yeah.
So, like, bang, bang scenes for Noel here made him my Edward Larkin for the ep.
We're going to need a new drop here. So join me in song, Adam. Edward Larkin! All right. I think disco going forward. We got Edward Larkin now.
Wow. I think that makes a lot of sense.
Well, Adam, we got another episode coming up in a couple of weeks, and I think it is high time we crack into these Star Trek Discovery Aftermath comics.
Yeah, we got to do that, and we have a few episodes in which to do it. Many of our Greatest Discovery episodes will be short treks related before the Picard premiere, but we do have some space to revisit the Star Trek Discovery comic series, and I think that would be good work to do before the next season.
Yeah, I think we'll probably do issues 1 and 2 of Star Trek Discovery Aftermath in 2 weeks, and then I think it's a short trek after that, and then we'll grab 3 and 4 after that. So that will be the next 3 episodes.
It's going to be like an every other one situation.
Yeah.
Until Picard.
So, I'm looking forward to all of that stuff. And if you think that the comic book recap episodes are boring, fuck you!
We're not the dumb ones. You're the dumb one.
Yeah. You logged into Reddit to say that.
Take it away, Robs.
The Greatest Discovery is a Maximum Fun podcast hosted by Benjamin Harrison and Adam Pranica. It's produced by me, Rob Schulte. Our theme music is by Friend of DeSoto and YouTube sensation Adam Ragusea. The Greatest Discovery is made possible by the support of our listeners like you. Make sure the show continues by going to MaximumFun.org/donate. If you'd like to discuss the show online, please use the hashtag GreatestDiscovery. You can find Ben on Twitter at BenjaminAHR. Adam is at CutForTime. And I'm at Rob K. Schulte. Thanks. We'll see you on the next episode of The Greatest Discovery.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.